Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology with its sleek mid-cut silhouette. It's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome, tennis fans, to KickServeRadio.com 2024, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, featuring International Tennis Hall of Famer, former world number one, Mats Wilander, and Texas Longhorn all-time great, two-time All-American Johnny Levine. Your host of KickServeRadio.com is Andy Zoden. So, take it away, AZ.
And take it away, I will welcome everybody to the Aussie Open recap edition of KickServeRadio.com. We're part of Tennis Channel Podcast Network, and as you heard, we are joined by and we feature the great Mats Wilander, seven-time Grand Slam champion, three-time Davis Cup champion, International Tennis Hall of Famer, former number one in the world. Johnny Levine will be joining us a little bit later, the two-time All-American from the University of Texas. But we start with this, Mats Wilander. We have now been doing this show. We're going on 4 years. This is our fourth year. And since day one, you have not been on the Yannick Sinner bandwagon. You have been driving the damn thing yourself as if it were afloat in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade, waving at the crowd as you drove by, talking about Yannick Sinner since the kid was the tender age of 18. So with that being said, at this point, watching this kid become the player he has become, become the man he has become, and to win his first major title, how do you feel?
Great to be with you, Andy. 4 years is blown by, that's for sure. It's been so much fun, and especially when you're right. Only kidding. I think the reason from the beginning was that he was always an unbelievable ball striker, but he never really played in the juniors. And that makes a huge difference to me, that if you play in the juniors and you win everything, it might be too much, but he came up in a way very quickly through the ranks. So I am so, again, this happens to me quite often where I'm like, I can't believe that I'm so lucky to call myself a former tennis professional, because some guys just make our sport a place where you want to work in, where you want to be around them. And they can be like Carlos Alcaraz, which is a little flashy and flamboyant, but in an unbelievably nice way. They can be Daniil Medvedev. That's funny. He's real. He doesn't really care, but he does care what people think. But he's still going to say what he wants. Or a Nick Kyrgios that had his bad sides, but he also has a lot of good sides, we have now found out since commentating. So to see Sinner, there's so much to love about Yannick Sinner. Now you can add the footwork and the forehand and the improved serve, but the personality itself, Alcaraz and him had had some unbelievable battles. Now that Sinner knows he can win, can you imagine those matches going forwards? It's going to be absolutely incredibly exciting to anticipate the level that they're playing at.
There's so much to unpack, Mats, about everything that you just touched on for the most part outside the lines. But let's talk inside the lines a little bit more. Now, the Medvedev match, I think we can reconcile a little easier. He was a huge favorite going into that match. He had spent substantially less time on court than Medvedev. I believe it was somewhere between 6 and 8 hours less court time. Medvedev had to go through so much just to get by Zverev in 5 sets. But let's take on the semifinal when we look at Sinner versus Djokovic, because this is what really, to me and to a lot of people, not that it wouldn't have been legitimate otherwise, but this really legitimizes this Australian Open title for Yannick Sinner to have had to go through the best Australian Open player in the history of the sport, the best player in the history of the sport, for that matter, Novak Djokovic. Does this speak more of Yannick Sinner's improvement, or does it speak more to a decline in what we're going to see now from now on with Djokovic, or is it obviously more likely some combination of those two?
Well, I don't think that there's going to be much of a decline for Djokovic, to be honest. I think that he had a really off day, which in my eyes is kind of heartwarming. I don't mean that in the wrong way, but to see that he is really human, and now it becomes superhuman what he's done for the last few years, because he really hasn't thrown in a performance like that. So I think that played a part. I think Novak understood, if I don't have a good day, I'm in serious trouble. And I don't think there are more than one or two guys in the top 100 that Novak thinks like that against. And I think Sinner is one. I would go out on a limb and say that the Alcaraz and Sinner challenge for Novak is a little bit more risky than the challenge that came from Stefanos Tsitsipas, Daniil Medvedev, and Sasha Zverev, what, 4, 5, 6 years ago. I think these guys are a couple of years ahead. They play faster, and they play faster than Novak. So I love it in a way, because I think Novak is going to come back. And I mean, he doesn't want to go out like that. We know that. And he's not going to. I think he's going to win majors this year. I think Sinner might win another one now that he's won this one.
Before we go to break, Mats, Jannik Sinner wins his first major and he goes home to Italy. He's now won the Davis Cup for his country. I mean, the guy right now rivals Julius Caesar in popularity when he goes back to Italy. How big is this for him? And does the team that he has in place, including, as you mentioned, Darren Cahill, really provide you with some confidence that they're going to do everything that they can to make sure that this kid is going to thrive from this win and not potentially take a step back because of the demands of now being the first Italian Grand Slam champion ever on the men's side?
Yeah, exactly. I think that the world that he trains in and that you just mentioned, I think that's not his world. That's not the world that that's the world he works in. And I think the world that he lives in emotionally is that mountain village of Cortina. I mean, he's obviously a former alpine skier, and there's something about that culture being out in the fresh air, and it's all about conditions, but it's really all about having fun. But I think you're right, Cahill, those guys, I mean, they're so grounded, the whole team. They're having fun, and he believes in them. He said, they give me the freedom to be who I am and do what I want, but I need their leadership to sort of take me down the path where I could get lost otherwise. So everything he does and says to me, best part is when he takes his cap off, because who would ever imagine that there's hair like that underneath the cap?
He's got a mop.
Yeah, that puts him in legendary status when it comes to just his look, for sure.
And speaking of Italian, legendary Italian players, I mentioned Jannik Sinner being the first Italian Grand Slam champion. Don't want to shortchange Adriano Panatta winning the French Open in 76. Got to make sure that we correct that. All right, let's go to break, Mats. Lots more to get to in recapping this 24 Aussie Open. Aryna Sabalenka didn't just repeat, but she made a statement. And we'll get to that, among other things, when we come back. KickServeRadio.com, part of Tennis Channel Podcast Network.
Hey, tennis fans, it's Sarah Z here, and I want to make sure that you've got the BNP Paribas Open on your travel radar. March 6th through 17th at the Indian Wells Gardens. Go to bnpparibasopen.com and make your plans today. It is a tennis extravaganza you don't want to miss.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Aussie Open edition of KickServeRadio.com, Tennis Channel Podcast Network, AZ and Mats. taking a look back. Johnny will be joining us a little bit later. I know he wants to talk about the doubles, but I got more singles to talk to you about, Mats. But before we even get to that, you made a quick comment. We kind of brushed over it real quick, but I think there's more of a story there. And that's Nick Kyrgios as a commentator. And I found it really kind of, I couldn't help but smile when I was watching Nick do his thing, because it's like, this guy's really a nice guy. And he's funny, and he's good-hearted, and he's respectful to the other commentators, and he's respectful about the people that he's talking about. So it's like, who is the real Nick Kyrgios, Mats?
Well, I think there is most probably a couple of different personalities, because, and I'm not saying that because I know, but he even referred to that as well when he was talking about psychological strength, and he would be very sarcastic, deprecating towards himself in one way, and he can't be coached, and he tried, but it doesn't work. So I think that we got such an insight in how Nick Kyrgios handles the pressure of competition, and it's nothing like nearly anyone else has handled it. John McEnroe did it in his own way. Of course, everybody did it in their own way, but most of us were keeping most of it on the inside. So I think with Nick, it was brilliant to have his insight. I thought he was great. I hope he keeps going. But I think that after that, I think of Chris Eubanks, because he very famously said that he thought of tennis differently after he started commentating for the Tennis Channel. And we all know what's happened to Chris Eubanks. He's top 30 in the world pretty much, and quarters of Wimbledon. I mean, who would have ever thought that about him? I don't think he did. So maybe Nick will understand tennis a little bit differently, or competition at least, and sort of how to behave. Do we want Nick Kyrgios to change is the big question.
I would say, Mats, if I had to comment on that question that you posed, do we want Nick Kyrgios to change? I would say that might be a bit much to ask, but I don't think anybody would mind seeing him mature.
Yeah.
And just mature into, you know, a slightly more mellow version of himself, that has that smile on his face, and as opposed to the scowl. If the chirping of the box and the scowl and the blaming and some of that stuff was to subside, and we were to see a little more of that really sweet, playful kid, if you will, who knows a hell of a lot about tennis and says a lot of the right things at the right time, I don't think any tennis fan in their right mind would have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Sasha Zverev. Because this guy can play great tennis, and he still has this block that prevents him from, and you made mention of it when we talked about, for whatever reason, he had this winning formula against Medvedev that, if memory serves when we chatted, had a lot to do with frequency of getting to the net, and that you felt that at a certain point he sort of refrained from doing it as much, and subsequently a 5-set loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking in many ways. We have to remember he won the Olympic gold, and he's won the ATP finals a couple of times, and he's won ATP 1000 tournaments. He's beaten everybody. He beat Federer, Nadal in the same week at the ATP finals. So I think he's had enough success. Should have won the US Open most probably when they lost to Dominic Thiem. But he's made an unbelievable comeback. So I think that there is still a learning curve for him. I think that he is not tactically there all the time yet. And I think Medvedev kind of showed that in the finals against Sinner too. He can play very aggressive tennis, but maybe doesn't quite yet. But they will, I think. And that's what I think is refreshing with Sasha Zverev, is that he's there. Now he was unbelievably close, obviously. Who would have thought that? Who would have ever thought that he would come to the net 75 times anyway? So I think that he's taken very, very small steps, but in the right direction to me, especially since he broke his foot a couple years ago against Rafa Nadal at the French Open. So I think the steps are not anywhere close to the size that Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner are taking, but he's taken them slowly. And with that serve and the physicality, he's a breath of fresh air when he plays aggressive tennis to me. But Wow, what a heartbreaking situation for him. And I mean, everything that we have heard is still going on off the court in his former sort of private life. You feel for the guy, and at the same time, don't know how you play good tennis when things like that are still sort of up in the air a little bit with his court case and how obviously the official situation is been fined by the judge, but he's appealing it. So who knows, right?
And I want to credit you, Mats, because if you hadn't mentioned it, I was going to have to ask, would we be remiss not to mention, you can talk about it being heartbreaking and this and that, but there are people out there that aren't, you know, playing a violin for Alexander Zverev because of the fact that they have already judged him in their own way based on what you referred to, which is the domestic violence issues. And those are still up in the air, and how that doesn't have an effect on you with all that is at stake and the paper thin margins that these guys play. I think we would be remiss not to at least address that. We don't have to judge it, and you certainly didn't, and I'm not going to either, but we have to at least make mention of it. Okay. Arina Sabalenka, it was such a relief to the entire tennis fandom at large across the world to see her get that monkey off her back and win that first major at the Australian. This was very different. This was a bulldozer. This tournament was won in as dominant a fashion as we ever saw Serena win. And she may not be ranked number one in the world right now, but she sees herself as the number one player in the world. Andy Roddick came out and said she has every right to consider herself at this moment to be the number one player in the world. And I ask you, how does anybody not consider her at this moment not to be the number one player in the world?
Yeah, I think she is. I really do. I mean, the rankings don't show it, but I think she is. Because, again, she is not only hitting the ball hard. She knows how to do other things these days. She can slice a backhand against Coco Gauff in the semis. We actually interviewed her for Eurosport again, and because she came to the net not that many times, but like 20 times, and just cut the angles off, and so Coco couldn't sort of keep running from corner to corner and keep the ball in play because she would cut the angles off. And I think that speaks volume of the process that she's enjoying, becoming a more complete tennis player. In the end, she wins because she's got more power than other, but you got to win points in many different ways. And I think she's understood that you can't just win points one way. It's got to be different ways. And even if you look back at someone like Serena Williams, she also, when she decided to not miss, she decided not to miss. And she decided to, hey, I'm going to keep the ball in play a little bit longer because this is the right thing to do right now. So I think that it's amazing. What's the most amazing thing to me is that I remember back in the day when some of them were women, and don't get me wrong, men did it too. And men are louder in terms of grunting than some of the women for sure. But I remember when Monica Seles came out. And of course, one of the most unbelievable fighters there are, but there was talk about, ooh, she's a little bit loud.
The
then
shrieking.
Victoria Azarenka. Yeah, Victoria Azarenka came out, and there was some, oh, is this too loud? What's going on? With Sabalenka, there is a spirit there that I think people find endearing. And I'm not saying Azarenka, she has the same spirit because she's such a fighter. Monica Seles, same thing, would have won so much more. And obviously with what happened with the stabbing, we feel so bad for her. And she's a great lady. So is Victoria Azarenka. And Sabalenka, people just love being sort of around her. Her team, they're unbelievably fun. They're making it fun for her. But in the end, when she's on the biggest stage in the world in professional tennis, people love her. And I think it's because there's an innocence, there's a self-confidence, and there is a, I'm not holding back because I'm going to go out here. And also you get the feeling that if it doesn't work, she's going to be the most graceful loser that you can ever be these days. So I think she's grown as a person, and she's so fit. She moves well, and she's got an unbelievably healthy attitude these days. So well worth And it was interesting, Coco Gauff and her, easily the best match at the Australian Open in terms of the women's match, and easily the player that took Sabalenka to the closest two sets.
Let me ask you this regarding those two matches, and I apologize. But first of all, I think what you allude to but didn't necessarily say specifically was part of what the fans love about Sabalenka is that she wears her emotions on her sleeve like no other. I mean, we know exactly what she's thinking, and fans live and die with her because they can see exactly where she's at. But then I ask you from a strategic standpoint with Arena coming in and cutting off some of these balls and moving to the net basically speaks to an adjustment made that would come on the heels of that loss at the US Open, because Coco was able to defend the court so well and run down those balls. And if Arena wasn't in there to knock off the volley, then it just reset the point. So now she's made the adjustment and she's beaten Coco. So now what is the next adjustment for Coco Gauff if she's going to then try to recapture the upper hand? Because you wouldn't have necessarily thought of Coco Gauff in years past as being athlete for athlete, the same in the same weight class, if you will, as Arena Sabalenka. But when you look at Coco Gauff now, man, you're seeing some shoulders on this girl and you're seeing some quads on her. She's a full grown woman now. And these two athletes, these are both heavyweights in the women's game. And I don't mean that in a, you know, in any kind of a negative way. I just mean they are built for serious brawling out on the tennis court. But now it's going to be just, it's going to be a game of tactics. What's Coco's next move?
Well, I think that it needs to be said that the Australian Open courts are playing faster than the US Open. They're obviously faster than the French Open. They're different for Wimbledon, because Wimbledon, it's not as easy to play like Sabalenka because the bounce is lower. It is not completely true all the time. So there's some doubt in there. And I think for Coco Gauff, being such a great mover and maybe being not being ultra aggressive, I think a grass court also with that slice serve, I think that she can have some great success on the grass court. I mean, just look at Marketa Vondrousova. I mean, she couldn't win on any other surface, but with craftiness and good movement and anticipation, you can. So I think the Australian Open is the perfect surface for Sabalenka. And I think it's the worst slam for Coco Gauff in terms of the court speed and in terms of, and they talked about it so much that some Melbourne Knights, they're 60 degrees and the balls become really heavy and the courts slow down. And the next day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's
100,
90 degrees.
Right.
And the balls are flying through the court. So you have to make some serious adjustments there. And for Sabalenka, both situations are good. Heavy tennis balls means she can go for it and not miss as much. Faster court with fast tennis balls means she only hits to hit maybe two shots a rally before it to being over. So to me, I think there's no need to panic for Coco Gauff. I think that she talked about working a little bit for a couple of days with Andy Roddick on her serve. I think that needs to be addressed again. She serves harder. Don't necessarily think she serves better. The forehand will always be a work in progress, but with Brad Gilbert there, with now that she mentioned Andy Roddick, I think that there's a very healthy situation around Coco, and she's 19. So I think that she doesn't have to worry about anything. Maybe that might take a couple of years for her to sort of challenge Sabalenka in 10 matches out of 10. But she's going to win three or four if they're meaningful because of her spirit and her competitive nature, Coco Gauff, I think, even against Sabalenka.
19, I think they said she'll be 20 prior to the next major, but at 19 years of age, she's 3 in the world with the U.S. Open in her pocket, and the future has never been brighter for her. It's never been brighter for Sabalenka. Last word, Iga Świątek. I asked you about Djokovic. Is there cause for concern with Djokovic? You seem to think he'll be able to right the ship. Świątek, we just don't have enough years of data to know whether or not this loss at the Australian. She almost lost to Danielle Collins. But then she ends up losing to a teenager, and she's taken it on the chin a couple of times unexpectedly in the last year, Matt. She was so dominant, and now not so much.
Yeah, it's nearly like when you watch her play at the Australian Open that she's trying to keep up with the hard-hitting Sabalenka and Rybakina. And I think that's wrong. I think that she has a forehand that can put an enormous amount of topspin on it. And I think she needs to use that. And obviously, she's won four majors. So it really, Jannik Sinner has won one. But if you, again, saw Sinner suddenly slow it down on second serve returns, looping it up a little bit higher, not giving Medvedev as much to work with in terms of pace, I feel like Iga Swiatek against that match against Linda Noskova, she refused to sort of loop it up a little bit and refused to realize that, hey, this girl is hitting me off the court. If we're playing the same game, let me use my experience, my forehand topspin, maybe my kick serve, and let's just change things around. So I think that takes a certain maturity that I think will still come to on off days or an on day for your opponent that you realize that, hey, it doesn't matter what the number next to my name says. This girl is out hitting me and I've got to slow things down and I've got to play my style of tennis. I feel like she's trying to keep up and be a little bit too aggressive at this moment and trying to hit with those girls. With that forehand grip, that's nearly impossible to do. And she should start spinning the forehand like she does on clay. And I think that she will have better success against hard hitters. But at the same time, she's so young and she's such a hard worker that I cannot imagine that she won't have another sort of 12-month period where she hardly loses a match again. I really don't think.
Is this a modern-day version, Mats, of what we saw when Martina Hingis was so dominant but then suddenly went up against the Williams sisters and some of the other power players? Is this kind of another, like, chapter two of what we saw at that time?
It is, yes. And I think Martina Hingis, she was so talented, and I think she would have figured it out. But I'll tell you what, I was at my best in 1988, and I played Andre Agassi in the semis of the French Open, and it went five sets.
You didn't win in the end. You won 11 the third, 11 the fifth. So
that's
you eked it out, yeah.
Because I think he started cramping, even though he was just standing, directing traffic. But the next year, I played Pete Sampras in I think the second round of the U.S. Open,
yep.
And I was the defending champion. And in those 2 years, I was like, okay, what happened in those 2 years? Because I was the number one in the world for most of 88. I felt winning three majors, but then suddenly these guys come out and they hit it harder, and I just couldn't. I didn't give myself enough time to maybe try and turn the tide, but it was just like, oh my goodness, like what happened to them? How can they hit the ball like that? I'm never going to be able to. And before I know it, they were so far ahead of me. So there is a chance that someone like Iga Swiatek, that if she tries to keep up with them, it might be the right thing to do, but at the same time, does she have the right technique on the forehand to keep up with them, or should she try and play the way she plays? Should I have tried to keep playing the way I play in 88 and taken some bad losses at times, but at least play the way I can play and not try to do something different? So, yeah, there's always that question with Iga for sure. But again, I think that she's a student of the game. She's so serious, and I don't think it's not gonna make a big difference. You know, Indian Wells is around the corner, and Indian Wells is a slow, hard court, and I think that favors somebody like Iga Swiatek's game because it's a little bit more like a clay court than the one at the Australian Open.
Well, I certainly didn't mean with that line of questioning of Iga Swiatek to have you conjure up those memories of playing Pete at the Open in 89. That was strictly accidental. But while you mentioned Indian Wells, and before we go to break, we're going to be on stage on Thursday night, Mats, March 7th, along with Kevin Cronin and a slew of other guests. Kevin's going to be doing the heavy lifting on the music, but you're going to be playing alongside of him. We're going to have guests. We're going to have a podcast. We're going to have a concert. We're going to have a hell of a time. It is going to be Tennis Channel Podcast Network presents kickserveradio.com featuring the great Mats Wilander, along with REO Speedwagon lead singer Kevin Cronin, Thursday night, March 7th, on the stage at Indian Wells, and it's going to be a great time. And with that, we'll go to break. I know you're looking forward to some knocking on heaven's door with Kevin Cronin, along with some great REO tunes. We'll go to break. We'll be back with Johnny Levine right after this. You're listening to the Aussie Open edition of KickServeRadio.com, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network.
Hi, guys. Sarah Z here with a KickServe Quick Serve with my friend and nutrition guru, Courtney Ward with BodyFuse. Courtney, as we ladies start to get, oh, shall I say, more advanced or more experienced in our life, how about just body weight and body maintenance? That for me is becoming, I think, tougher by the day.
Boy, you're not alone. And along with our sports performance line, BodyFuse also offers a full weight loss line. And we have a fantastic product called Purify, which kickstarts your weight loss. It's a GI detox. It's a water cut as well. So it's really great for bloating, irregularity, and people love it to kickstart a weight loss program. And then with that, we couple a product called Blackwall Shredded, kind of a cool name. It's a daytime thermogenic and also has a nootropic in it. It's not super high stimulant, but it's just a good mental focus. And it just basically kickstarts your metabolic rate. So that's a daytime thermogenic. We also offer a nighttime thermogenic called Midnight Burn. And this has melatonin and GABA as well as a thermogenic. So it kind of continues that metabolic rate bump, if you will. So that these three products are sort of like the magic trinity. I don't want to say magic pills because there's no such thing, but Midnight Burn at night, Blackwall Shredded in the day, and then Purify to kind of kickstart your system and clean out your GI tracts. And in addition, Purify, along with the detox, it allows us to start absorbing nutrients a little bit more efficiently as well. So those three products are just a fantastic trio and very, very popular.
Fantastic. And one more time, BodyFuse.
BodyFuseUSA.com.
Well, I'm Sarah Z. She's Courtney with BodyFuse. And now back to more tennis talk with the KickServe Radio Boys.
Welcome back, everybody. KickServeRadio.com, AZ, and as promised, now joined by Texas Longhorn, two-time All-American, former top 100 ATP player, Johnny Levine. And Johnny, it was interesting when we were prepping for this show, and I said, what do you feel like talking about? And you said, I feel like talking about Rohan Bopanna. And I can see why he would come to mind. Obviously, a great story with him becoming the number one player in the world in doubles during the Australian Open, displacing a kid that we like a lot, Austin Krajicek, but a guy we really also like a lot, Rohan Bopanna. But what was it that prompted you to want to make sure that that was something that we were going to definitely get to tonight?
Here's Johnny.
Rohan Bopanna, this is a guy that played in the Arizona Tennis Classic, the inaugural event in 2019. I remember distinctly talking with him, chatting with him, a wonderful guy, and really was kind of contemplating, you know, how much longer he was going to play on the tour. He had a coffee business back home, and I don't think he advanced too far in that tournament, and he was struggling. But to see his resurgence at 43 years old, to end up being number one in the world, winning his first Grand Slam doubles event. What prompted me to talk about him, Andy, is something very unique in that I had read an article about Rohan a few months back, and I kind of was following him, and he credited his longevity and his sustaining this career to, during COVID, working on his joints, and his knee cartilage was bad, and he started with a certain type of yoga called Iyengar yoga.
Interesting.
He did it 3-4 times a week, and I believe he continues to do it. And I was fascinated by that because he really, really felt that that was the reason that he has sustained this career at such a late age. And so I was just fascinated by it. And he's at, and you know, I'm a typical, you know, former tennis guy that's stiff and tight and not too flexible. So because of Rohan, I'm now doing Iyengar yoga.
Well, and you're also a guy that I don't know that anybody would have expected, nobody that knew you when you were at the peak of your powers as a player, like I did, would have thought that your best results would have come also as a doubles player. You and Eric Carita in your final year on tour, making the quarterfinals of the French Open and the U.S. Open. So I know you have a place in your heart for the doubles players. And it's funny, Johnny, really, it's not funny. Doubles is just waning in popularity right now. And I find that to be sad, because having been around a lot of these guys, they're such good dudes. And Miguel Reyes-Varela, who played at the University of Texas like we did, we got to know him a little bit. Great guy. Isn't it a shame that it's kind of waning in popularity? And what can be done to change that?
You know, I don't know that there's much that can be done other than have the top singles guys play doubles, because what it comes down to, Andy, is economics. And, you know, it's just hard to sell tickets, you know, to doubles events. They're kind of an add-on from the singles. And I believe years ago when the World Tour Finals tried to have the doubles at a separate venue than the singles, it couldn't make it. So now they have it combined with the singles guys. And so they kind of feed off of the crowds that are already there. But, you know, it comes down to what sells tickets. And unfortunately, the doubles guys don't have the name that these top singles guys do. And frankly, if the singles guys were to play doubles, you know, like John McEnroe used to and some of the other guys, they likely would be victorious over these double specialists, to be honest with you.
Another former couple of Longhorn guys that did that were Kevin Curran and Steve Denton. They both have fabulous results as singles players. And I think they spent time at the very top of the doubles rankings at number one in the world. And you're right. It's unfortunate because by and large, tennis fans are doubles players and they enjoy watching doubles, but even more so, they enjoy watching people that they recognize. A guy like Nick Kyrgios, and actually for that matter, a lot of the players at Indian Wells, that has been part of the success at Indian Wells, is that that's one of the few tour stops where you had a lot of singles players playing in the doubles, but even that started to fall off and you're not seeing as much of that anymore either. The only time you see the singles players in the doubles is in Davis Cup, and we see Davis Cup less frequently than we used to as well.
And what's interesting, Andy, about the doubles today, and I was, you know, pretty blown away. I haven't followed the doubles too much, but I mean, I follow the guys, but I haven't watched a lot of the matches, but
they don't show them.
Well, in the finals of the Australian Open, all four players, I don't know if you noticed this, they all served and stayed back.
It's incredible.
It's an incredible thing. And I, you know, it's just such a different game now. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some guys that still do the serve volley, but by and large, I mean, I guess it has to do with how great guys are returning, but that is a new one on me.
If memory serves, Johnny, I think that started back at the French Open with Xavier Molise and Christoph Rokas. Remember, they were either in that final, maybe even won that final. I can't remember if they won it or not. I should know that, but they definitely were serving and staying back, and they were pretty successful doing it. But you're right. It's just not something that we saw a lot of. And now, you know, the art of the serve and volley is just it's really falling off. And before we go on to talk about your tournament, which is coming up faster. Well, I tell you what, 1 year sure goes by fast, and I'm sure excited about that tournament. But that final with Jannik Sinner, I really think that that's great for tennis that Sinner won that match. I really think having him coming into the season as a bona fide Grand Slam champion is great for the sport. And I happen to really like the kid. How much did you see the extra time on court affect Daniil Medvedev coming down the stretch of that final against Jannik Sinner?
Yeah, I think it had a lot to do with it, Andy. And Medvedev, you know, referred to that after he lost. I mean, he had some tough matches, you know, starting with the second round. Even the first round, you know, he lost the first set. Sinner, on the other hand, you know, had a pretty easy run in many of his matches. So I think he was a lot fresher. And it showed. I mean, he was down two sets to love, but he still had plenty of energy, plenty of fight in him, and hung tough and won the last three sets, 4-4 and 3, to get his first Grand Slam title.
You know, Johnny, it's interesting. I believe that the physical toll was there and coming back from two sets to love, not just playing Zverev five sets, but two sets to love down, and the emotional side of things, I think, has an effect as well. But he's now been in six major finals and he's lost five of them. And he's the only player in men's tennis history to lose two major finals up two sets to love. So the physical side I can see, but is it possible that it's in his head now, or you think this guy's maybe mentally tougher than that and he's going to be able to set this aside and not be sort of known for this when all is said and done?
Yeah, I don't think Medvedev is really a guy that chokes or gets super tight. And I mean, he's been in a lot of finals. He obviously had the big victory against Djokovic.
The big victory at the U.S. Open, are you talking about when he won his one major?
That's right, when he won his one major. I mean, he's been there, and in this particular match, I guess he's shown some nerves here and there early on against Nadal, but I don't think it's going to hold him back. I mean, this is probably, the hard court is his best surface, and I think the U.S. Open and the Australian Open are going to be the tournaments that he'll look to win in the future. I think he'll struggle, obviously, on the red clay, and I think he'll do okay at Wimbledon, but I think he's got great shots in his future to win more slams at the Aussie and the U.S. Open.
And then finally, Johnny, I want to get to the Arizona Tennis Classic, but it would not be right to not have you have at least a word on the Djokovic performance, because it looked for all the world like he was on his way to winning his 25th and winning his 11th at the Australian. He did lose a couple of sets early on, which is a little uncharacteristic of him, but the match against Sinner, is there more to be made of that than this was just a great day for Sinner and not Djokovic's best day? Or is there a little bit of, okay, Father Time is undefeated, and as we said in our last podcast, he certainly got his hands full with this guy, but have we maybe seen just the first possible downtick in his dominance of the men's game?
Well, I hate to say it, but I think possibly.
Okay.
You know, what's happened now with the guys like Alcaraz, Medvedev, Sinner, they know they can beat Djokovic. So that awe factor is no longer apparent and part of that dynamic. Djokovic knows that. And look, let's face it. I mean, it's just not going to get any easier for Djokovic. He still has chances to win more slams, but it's certainly going to be tough. I think he can do it on the grass. You know, I think the clay is going to be very, I just don't see it on the clay, but look, he's surprised us. He's at 24 slams. It wouldn't surprise me if he won another two or three, but it's going to be very, very difficult, much more difficult than any of the slams he's won.
All right. Arizona Tennis Classic is March 11th through 17th. Nuno Borges won it last year. Dennis Kudla the year before that actually bagged a double, won the singles and the doubles. And the first year we had it, you had it, Matteo Berrettini was the champion, and he is still a big-time crowd favorite. So you have all these young up-and-comers like Borges, and last year we were treated to some amazing tennis from the likes of Alexander Shevchenko, the player that really was electric. But we also got to see Berrettini. We also got to see Diego Schwartzman. We also got to see Gael Monfils. So you've still got that great blend of these up-and-coming young players and some of these guys that we've watched play for years and years. Is that something we should expect again in 2024?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a great field. We have that great week in the calendar, so we will get great players. We don't know exactly that list of guys until we get about 3-4 weeks out from the tournament. But I do want to mention one guy, a U.S.-American guy that just cracked the top 100. He's now sitting at 85, first time in the top 100. And that's Alexander Kovacevic, who played our tournament last year and had a great run. We want to give him congratulations on reaching the top 100. And he's really looking like he's going to have a bright future in the game and probably will consistently stay in that top 100.
Alex Kovacevic, who played at the University of Illinois. And if you have not seen that kid play and you want to see one of the prettiest young one-handers in the sport right now, you had J.J. Wolf sort of put the crowd in the palm of its hand the year before. It was Alex Kovacevic that did it last year. And you get these young guys that you see them up close And then suddenly, as you said, Johnny, these guys are starting to, you know, move into the top 100, and you start seeing them on television at these majors. And it's really cool because oftentimes you'll see these guys. Brad Gilbert pointed that out the first year that we interviewed him. He's like, you're going to discover people at Johnny Levine's tournament. And Matteo Berrettini won it. He was 57 in the world. I'd never heard of him. I'd never laid eyes on him. And then I watched him play Federer in the round of 16 at Wimbledon later that year, and Rafa Nadal in the semifinals of the US Open 6 months after winning your tournament. So that's the kind of thing you can see. The doubles is amazing. And if you can't make it out to Indian Wells and you want to see some phenomenal pro tennis in one of the most intimate venues that you can possibly have at the Phoenix Country Club, you got to get tickets to the Arizona Tennis Classic in Phoenix, Arizona. Johnny, how do they get them?
Well, it's pretty easy. All they have to do is go to the Arizona Tennis Classic, and there will be a link for tickets. And it's got an array of different packages, daily tickets, and all different sessions you can buy. And so we're going to pray for good weather and hope for a great tournament and have you be our annual MC, and we look forward to having you, Andy, introducing all the players and being the face of the tournament.
There's two things you can count on, Johnny, with all of what you just said. Good weather in Phoenix, Arizona, pretty likely. A good chance that while on the mic, I will ask inappropriate questions of these players, also incredibly likely, but that adds a little bit of sauce, a little spice to the tournament. I know it's a little cringy for you at times seeing me down there, but I do my best to make you as uncomfortable as I can. And I think I hit the mark regularly.
Yes, you do, Andy. Yes, you do. You have a lock on before at Indian Wells, and that's going to be exciting. And then we're going to look forward to having you come from Indian Wells right into Phoenix and to do your thing. So it'll be great.
We talked about it earlier on the show with Matt. KickServeRadio.com presents an evening with Mats Wilander, Kevin Cronin, and many other tennis players that are going to be brought up on that stage at Indian Wells on Thursday from 4:30 to 6. So, yes, thanks for mentioning that as well. For Johnny Levine and Mats Wilander, I'm Andy Zoden. We're KickServeRadio.com. We look forward to seeing you in the desert at both Indian Wells at the Garden and in Arizona at the Arizona Tennis Classic at the Phoenix Country Club. And hopefully you'll catch us all year long with much more on KickServeRadio.com, part of Tennis Channel Podcast Network.